thin and...
My style can't be duplicated or recycled.
I am a traveler. A wonder.
I'm not a disc jockey. I'm a human radio station.
Dante's Hot Tub with your host, Juan Rapido.
What a bummer!
On Radio Valencia, Wednesday, 8 to 10.
Countdown, take me away!
Thank you very much. You've been a delightful audience.
They couldn't tell that we were lying, and since Granny was unconscious, she was doing no denying.
With us two dreadful children, destruction is our aim. The people who have dealt with us are never quite the same. We like to torture babies and to leave them in the rain. With us two dreadful children, we delight in causing pain. We are those two dreadful children, and we always go too far.
Stay the night. Yes, we crept up to her bedroom and we set her hair alight. And at the breakfast table next day, Auntie looked a fright. And our dear aunt, who was always given to understatement, declared that she had slept badly that night.
With depravity,
sell mother down the river off a chest one time. Some children are adorable.
We'd rather be deplorable. We'd like to tell you, Mom, and we just haven't got the time.
We haven't got the time.
We're too busy being thoroughly detestable.
And then one day, a lady came to us and told us that all we really wanted was love.
And so we got her by the arms, her legs, and swung her in the air. And then we kicked her in the stomach, and we grabbed her by the hair. And then we poked her out the pencil, stick marbles up her nose. And then we dragged her around the garden with a poison apple. And after that, we stopped and said,
I think the lady knows.
That with us two dreadful children, we're always playing games. We once burned down the house because we both felt like a change. With us two dreadful children.
But take one look at our sweet angelic faces, and let it not be forgotten. Down at heart, we're both really rotten.
We are those two dreadful children, and we always go too far. We are those two dreadful children, and we always go too far.
Disco, disco, I am going to Mount Kisco. I am going to buy Crisco to bake a cake so I can disco, disco, disco. Disco, disco, disco. How long are you staying? disco, disco, disco. I am going to get fired. Disco, disco, disco. You make me so tired. Disco, disco, disco. If I don't get fired, I am going to Jalisco and dance on a wire. Disco, disco, disco. If I don't get Crisco, when I get to Mount Kisco, I am going to Jalisco and become a Cisco and then move to Frisco. Become a Cisco and move to Frisco. Disco, disco, disco.
This is Smelly Kelly from Red Meat, and when I'm in San Francisco, and that's all the fucking time, I listen to Radio Valencia, because they play that good root shit. God bless you. Take care. Say hello to the children.
Well, she tossed all night like a raging sea, woke up and climbed from the suicide machine. With her Spanish candles and her Persian poles, stuck on the rocks inside Opus 40 stone. And scratching her wrists in the pouring rain, she collapses down upon the ocean floor. I'm alive, she cried, but I don't know what it means. But somewhere out there across the moonlit sands, there's a line drawn like the lines on her own hand. Slamming her eyes, locking the door, she collapses down
few, I cracked a can, so did you. We're gonna change the world.
All right.
The girl kings of dance, a town, estates, and parks, a higher ground. Do anything that we found, and on the river flows. Oh, you take a drink from the Reverend Jimmy John Jack. On the path that comes right. Throw the side and left to wait. She'll ambush you. You knew your place. You wander around. Get out of your face. On the river flows. Whoa. And on and on the river flows. Away the undertow. Smoke and brew you do, but it sure has left its mark on you. Be still with us today.
Right.
Life goes on and round the gum, and words can kill the things I know. Often you cut me deeply sobered on the river flows. You set the table for the barber, sweetie Todd. Yeah, you flip the wings on the very rising guard. Make a little hope alone, it can be caught. The light is grown, broke your spirit, but not your bones. And on the river flows.
Looking up the street to see what he can do. He throws the goat, let's get the people swaying. Throw the goat, rock out like we're praying. We throw the goat, no time can be wasted. We're watching history make itself. Let's strip our souls buck naked. The magician lifts his hand, not once, but twice and a third time. The tightrope walkers holding fast to the arms of the birdman. The crowd is hushed and still again. No one knows what we're needing, except some goddamn magic fast, so we don't forget we're living. We're
flashes in his pocket, silver flashes in his hand, smoke curls from his fingers like a shotgun on the lam. A smile across his face as he tips his flask and drinks.
We escape. us a song to keep us warm. Such a chill, such a chill.
Hey guys, I'm back. I recently, oh my god, I want to film it on my computer, so let me pull that up. But in the meantime, I wanted to tell you guys that I recently saw one battle after another. I'm not even gonna lie, I feel like my expectations were low, slash I did not know what to expect. Probably just because I'm not like a big follower. I haven't been like a long time fan of like Paul Thomas Anderson's work. I think now like I will be, especially after like he won Best Film at the Golden Globes. I think he won like 3 other awards. Correct me if I'm wrong, I think the actress Teyana Taylor won Best Actress in one battle after another at the Golden Globes last night, which was really exciting. But this isn't about the Golden Globes and award shows, trust me, I could do quite a number of episodes on that. I guess I just really wanted to talk about like the themes and the plot, and I was looking it up. Apparently, like, this movie was based off a book. Paul Thomas Anderson took these ideas and he sort of shaped it and made it, like, his own. Which I think, you know, again, I didn't read the book, but in terms of adapting work, I feel like that approach is very strong because you're taking work and you're enhancing it, you're bringing something new to the table, and it's very clear that he has his own personal style and voice. And I was watching the film with family friends, and they kept talking about, oh my god, what were they talking about? The dialogue, and how it just felt absurd, and how that was like a theme throughout all of his films, like just ridiculous topics, like just the name of the group that Lockjaw was trying to get into. It was all absurdist, and I don't know if that's call Thomas Anderson's way of just like having fun and like having comic relief during this like intense movie, or if he is trying to make a comment about society that like the things that we get like so intense about are actually just like really silly. But these are kind of like the worlds that he builds and like the structures that take themselves so seriously and yet from the outside look or sound silly when you really get down to it. But I was really curious, like, what were these militia groups all about? Like, what did they stand for? Why were they here at this point in time? So there's like two main militia groups, but I was doing a bit of research, and the purpose of these groups were to really talk about power. I just combined words there. English? Talk about power, fear, and repetition. So, power in this film is less demonstrated through physicality and more through psychological tactics. One character imposing it on another, and how the character perceives themselves amongst others in their environment. The militias say they want order, protection, control of land, respect, to take back something they feel was stolen, which sounds pretty rational, but these groups don't really set out to accomplish solving these problems or protecting people or having any sense of stability. They take one form of control and replace it with another. They turn fear into authority. They justify more violence. I think Paul Thomas Anderson is trying to argue that violence becomes a substitute for meaning. People need a structure to belong to, even if it's destructive. I think it, like, I can't lie, like, he wasn't referencing, like, one specific battle in real life, or it wasn't clear to me where the film took place, because I think it's meant to represent kind of timeless issues, just how, like, people, you know, need a leader to follow, or how human nature can be violent, or, like, when we set out to resolve conflict through authority, it can turn destructive. So I think he's just using the violence and these militias to talk about larger universal themes in humanity. And I felt like at the beginning of the film, like, it was very confusing, all the violence, and in some ways seemed unnecessary, but that was, like, to prove a point that it's, like, it was just, like, endless chaos with no end in sight. I think there's no clear bad guy in this movie. There's a lot of moral gray area, which just leaves the audience questioning, like, wait, if we're not rooting for one person, you know, who is good and who is bad and what is right and what is wrong, and is everybody, you know, fighting for something justifiable? These groups are ideology first, they're opportunistic, and it's not really about, are you part of this group or are you part of that group? I think at the end of the day, if somebody feels the need to participate in these structures, they will find, like, another group that fills that need. The enemy is not a militia. The enemy is a system that keeps producing them. I think it's interesting that he released this movie when he did. It's like, I don't know if he's, like, directly calling out something specific in America, but, you know, as somebody living in America in the 21st century in 2026, like, I'm very sad to admit that I feel like, unfortunately, like, the culture has become quite violent in some ways. You know, I think between school shootings, and it's like, what have institutions really done about that? Amongst, you know, just crime rates in cities that... Sorry, I hear so much outside noise. In cities that used to be... used to have less fatal, like, stabbings and shootings, like Chicago and San Francisco. So I guess what I'm saying is, like, unfortunately, from the outside looking in, like, when you look at America today, it can feel like there's a lot of, like, unnecessary, endless violence, and I think it's just a symptom of the culture that we're living in, whether it's, like, institutions that allow it, or... in the culture, it's like people feel like that's justified. Like, you know, to a crazy person committing a crime, they feel like they have a good reason for doing whatever they're doing. And, you know, if we're talking about somebody, gosh, I'm getting so political today. If we're talking about somebody like Charlie Kirk, you know, the person that killed him feels like they have every right reason to, because they don't agree with his ideology. And I think it comes down to cancel culture, and I think it comes down to mob mentality, and it's quite scary that it's like someone could be triggered by like somebody having like a polarizing opinion and then feel like justice is... justice is violence. Violence is justified. Like, you know, someone might feel like, oh, because like, I'm Jewish. Like, someone could feel like, oh, well, I don't like Jews, so I have the right to hurt you, which is, like, very scary. It's very scary climate to live in. I feel like, you know, the institutions need to do better, but as the people, like, we need to hold them accountable. And, you know, we also should question ourselves, because even if we're not literally the ones going out and participating in violence or like literally being part of a mob, it's like, it's an ideology, right? It's like an ideology of like, you know, I'm right, you're so wrong, therefore I feel justified in doing whatever I have to do, canceling you, bringing you down. That sense of entitlement can lead to violence. So I do think, in some ways, he is taking, like, a part of American culture and saying, this is the climate that we're living in, the system, support this, the culture participates in unnecessary violence that they feel is justified. And, yeah, no, I mean, there's so much ambiguity in this film. Like, there's a lot of unanswered questions, a lot of uneasiness, which feels very true of life, that feels very grounded in realism. But Paul Thomas Anderson isn't looking for clear right and wrong answers, or is someone going to come out on top and win. He's asking the audience, why do we keep doing this? Why is it one battle after another? Why is there no end in sight for the political violence that people feel is justified, or the wars that we keep fighting? That's my interpretation. You know, I was trying to, like, do a little bit of research on his other films, and you know, this film has a lot of, like, repetition to, like, get his points across. You know, Willa is an interesting character. She is not, like, this force of hope, but she kind of presents, like, new possibilities. because she doesn't really just adopt other people's belief systems blindly. You know, she is rebellious, questioning through behavior. She's not saying what she's going to do. She's just doing it. She's not taking her personal pain, like, from losing people in her life and turning that into, like, an ideology, like, a reason to be violent and join a militia. According to ChatGPT, PTA often builds films around one character who doesn't fully submit to the dominant logic of the world. In the film, that's Willa. So she, you know, serves as a contrast, definitely against the other characters. I think it's like a film like this is saying about power that if someone's in a position of power, maybe it's just like they have an opportunity to create influence, create change. They have a weapon. They have a political stage, whatever it is. Like, it's easy to lose sight of why you're there in the first place, and it's easy to get caught up in whether it's continuing to fight unnecessary battles or, for lack of a better word, clout. Because, like, you know, that one character, Lockjaw, was doing anything to join, like, the Christmas Adventurers Club. I think that's what it was called. And it just kind of shows, like, in the society that we're in, we're, you know, we're so keen on getting titles and getting ahead. Like, we don't care at what cost. Like, in the end, he ended up hurting his own daughter, like, emotionally, and putting her, like, in danger. And it was just like the lengths he would go to, like, join this, like, ridiculous club. It's like a matter of your priorities are mismatched. It's like you could be using your power and your voice to do something more positive and more adding value, or, you know, just deciding to better yourself, because obviously, like, that character made, like, poor decisions at the beginning of the film, and it's just like he could have really grown. But instead of growing, he just becomes very selfish, and unfortunately, I feel like that's a missed opportunity for him to prove he could be a good dad, or show that, like, his violent past stayed in the past. And I also want to talk a little bit about Leonardo DiCaprio's performance, especially that phone call scene. I think the reason why I really like this movie is towards the middle of it, I felt like it really picked up, and just playing on the absurdism and, you know, in theater, having two opposing forces makes for, like, really good conflict and drama, and is just very interesting to watch. Like, the stakes are really high, and obviously the stakes were high in this movie, as, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio's trying to keep his daughter safe. I think the more desperate he gets, the more exciting it is to watch, because the performance that he puts on is so compelling. yeah, no, it's very, very fun to watch. And, I mean, even his costuming looks, like, ridiculous. And, you know, just the hoops he has to jump through. I don't know. Something about him being in, like, this violent world, but then also, like, a dad and, like, him looking very silly to try and go find her.